Senate will come to order.
Will the reading clerk please read the general committee report?
Mr. President, upon review, your journal committee reports that the Journal of February the 9th, 2010 was correct and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Without objection, it will be adopted. Message from the LSO.
February the 10th, 2010, to the Senate President Hines from Dan J. Pauley, Director. Subject, introduction deadline, final bill list. The following is reported pursuant to Senate Rule 24-2. The following Senate files and Senate joint resolutions were approved for introduction by the sponsors and signed, submitted, and accepted by the Legislative Service Office prior to 12 o'clock noon today, Wednesday, February the 10th, 2010, and have been jacketed and delivered to the Senate Chief Clerk. Senate files through 2 through 79 and Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 10th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 19, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 10th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 23, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side of introductory vote for Senate File 29, I would like to ask for reconsideration of that measure.
Thank you. The rules allow for a reconsideration vote. It's called for on the day of the vote or the following day. Senate File 29 was coroner's disclosure information. The chief clerk will call the roll for the reconsideration vote. It needs to be reconsidered, just a majority vote, and there is no debate on the issue. Chief clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson? Bebout?
Excused.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Myers S. Nicholas?
Excused.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Von Platern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote?
Perkins, no to I.
Martin, no to I. Closing vote. Closing vote, 12 ayes, 16 noes. 2 excused.
The reconsideration vote has failed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Johnson.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number 4, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Special District Elections. It was referred to Committee Number 4, which reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 4, Special District Elections. Mr. Vice President, I would yield to the floor manager, Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. We have all sorts of special districts in Wyoming, ranging from the small, like your some of your cemetery districts, all the way up to the large hospital districts, fire districts, and whatever. And their elections over these past decades that we have required by statute have sometimes been less than sterling. And so this bill comes to us from the County Clerks Association, giving the county clerk's oversight to the special district elections if the county clerks want the oversight and the special districts agree to it. The meat of the bill is on page 2, starting at line 3. The county clerk shall determine whether the election shall be conducted by the county clerk or the special district, taking into account each special district's expertise, manpower, and ability to conduct an election. And overseeing just means training, advice, assistance, or if the county clerk deems that it's something that they have to do, the county clerk can do this. And this is also true in mail elections. I think this is a bill that will clean up some problems that I know we've all heard about these past years, and would ask that you vote in favor of it.
Discussion? Are you ready for the question? Senator Coe.
Chairman, just a question. There's a cost to these elections. Does that get passed on to the special district? Or does that, because they lever their own monies, they have their own boards, or does the county end up paying for this oversight?
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. It's the special district's election. They pay for it.
Further discussion. Are you ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 4, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 4 has passed Committee of the Whole.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. The reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File Number 5, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Special Districts Public Records, an act relating to special districts and other specific public entities. It was referred to committee number 5. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 5, Special Districts Public Records. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment on Senate File 5. I would ask it to be read in at this time.
Senate File 5, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 6, line 7.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendments, Standing Committee, or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 5. Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the floor sponsor, Senator Hastert, to discuss the bill and dispose of the amendment. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That being Senate File 5, Special District Public Records, sponsored by the Joint Committee. This is Act relating to special districts. And what we're doing with this bill, Mr. Chairman, is special districts, it's a principal acts, and in the Wyoming Public Records Acts are controlling to the extent that they conflict with this act. This requires that rules and regulation, ordinance and bylaws be filed with the county clerk for each county in which it's located, Mr. Chairman. This also lists that the records which shall be maintained by the special districts that, and that that for each district they have the business office that is open to the public at least 20 business hours each week, then the records shall be maintained and available for public review in that office. Mr. Chairman, the clerks have agreed to file these, which include the option of electronic filing, which we're going to handle with the amendment, Mr. Chairman. For districts which do not have a business office that's open to the public for at least 20 hours each week, the records shall be filed with the county clerk in the county wherein the largest portion of these districts lies. And then also, Mr. Chairman, it amends, it requires that special districts to file notice with the county clerk by September 30th of each year, specifying where the documents are to be maintained for public review. That's kind of the short of or the what we're doing, the gist of the bill, Mr. Chairman. The amendment on page 6, line 7, inserts the words after documents, if the documents exist. Mr. Chairman, it's simply that not all special districts are required to maintain the list of documents. And so, and also if in the past, and I think there was some discussion in committee, as to if these documents were, you know, so old that they had been destroyed. So it just simply says if the documents exist. And then the second amendment, Mr. Chairman, is on page line 7. After the word lies, we insert that the documents may be in electronic format unless otherwise specified by the county clerk. The county clerk may specify the format for records filed pursuant to this subsection. And, Mr. Chairman, that just allows for it doesn't mandate that they are, but if some counties have the ability to maintain the electronic records and this at the discretion of the county clerks, it allows for and to be filed in electronic format. So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, I'd like to move the amendment and ask for your favorable consideration for the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Case.
When I moved this amendment, I called it Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. It is Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I want that to be known. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 5.
Thank you, Senator Case. We are on the amendment. We are on the amendment. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of Committee Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is passed. We are back on Senate File 5. Discussion on Senate File 5. Being called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 5 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 6.
Senate File Number 6, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Improvement and Service Districts, an act relating to improvement and service districts. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 6, Improvement and Service Districts. Mr. Chairman, I would yield to discuss the bill to the floor manager, Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, this appears to be the day for district bills, huh? This Senate File 6 is actually a Corporations Committee bill. The reason it was brought up in the committee was because it was found out that in many cases there was areas of the state that wanted to form districts for various reasons, and but because of the scope of and requirements of some of the districts where you had to have multiple reasons for creating them, also because some districts had a tendency to kind of have a little creeping effort as to what they were originally formed for and what they actually became later. And so this bill kind of corrects all that. So it also gets these people that, you know, that maybe they couldn't get ordinarily together to form a district, to say, well, if we just form it for one specific reason, we put that into law, then we can go ahead and form this district. And they also, the same process would occur, according to this bill, for changing the district. So there's this bill covers two items, and the crux of the bill you'll find on page 2, and this would be in little B and C. And if you notice on section B, the key word there is a petition for the formation of a district may limit the improvements or services to be provided by the district. Nothing in this subsection shall limit the ability to form a district for provisions of any or all improvement services authorized in 1812-112. So basically that means later you can change. You may form it for one reason, or you can go back and ask for the same votes that you originally got to form the district, actually to change it later for other purposes. And that's covered under little C there. A petition to change the purpose of a district shall proceed in accordance with the process for formation of a district as provided by this article. So you go through the same process. If you move on over to page 3 of the bill, there's a few little changes there, and most of these are kind of bringing it in line with the changes in the bill and also bringing it up to date with some past parts of the statute. In little A there, you see it says each district may, and before it had a whole grocery list of things that you could form districts for, and all we're doing is say they're in accordance with the purpose of which it was created. So now you can actually say this special district is created for this specific reason rather than a whole grocery list of things. And then in 8, in Romanet 8 there, it makes some changes. The ability to file liens for payment of unpaid charges was something that was added, and I want to talk about that in a minute, Mr. Chairman. And then also there were some correcting things there where you see they've added of any charges, and that means if you're changing rate charges, and also for payment of district indebtedness, changes to that. So that's some corrections. But we did receive, Mr. Chairman, a note from the Fremont County Treasurer with some concerns, and this may be something that we may have to, if this makes it through this reading, we may have to go back and look at that, because he sent us an email stating that in Wyoming Statute 18-12-11 mandates that the county official to collect proceeds at the time in the form and in the manner like interest and penalties as property is assessed and other taxes are collected by the treasurer. So we may have to do a little bit of mid-course correction on that part. But that's basically the bill, Mr. Chairman. There's no appropriations attached to this bill. It's a change that we thought was necessary, and the committee brought it as a committee bill. Thank you for that.
Further discussion on the bill? Mr. President.
Manager of the bill, maybe to expand a little bit on the liens. When I looked at that long list of special districts, does any of them have that power now? And is there any restrictions or guidelines on what they can file liens, the amount of that owed or anything in that area? If you could discuss that a little more.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the answer to that is no, they do not. This was at least as far as I know, this was added to the bill. But as I also mentioned, Mr. Chairman, and to the good senator from the Gillette area, this is something that we're probably going to have to, looks like maybe remove from the bill anyway, because this is the responsibility of the county treasurer and does not fall under the auspices of these districts. So there has been no rules or anything written on this yet. So looks like it's going to have to be taken out of the bill.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about the on page 2, it tells us that it authorizes changes, but what would happen if you had a water district and a sewer district that were that wanted to merge into one? Would this bill allow that, or is there some other stipulation that have to be done?
Senator Cooper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer that as best I can. I'm making a few assumptions here, maybe, and some of the legal beagles could maybe dig into this a little further, but I think the way I would look at that, you'd have to abandon one of those districts. I mean, that would have to be voted on by all the people that created that district to abandon it. And then, yes, you could have a combined sewer and water district together, but that would also then have to be voted on by the people in the other district, if it's the water district, to accept adding the condition of the sewer district to it. So it could be done, but it would take a couple of elections to get it done.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a very interesting question. I think it also might depend on whether the boundaries of the district were contiguous. If they were contiguous, you could go right down through here and change the purposes of one to include the purpose of the other, and then you could eliminate the first one. But if the boundaries involved other areas, it might get a little bit more complicated. It doesn't say it couldn't be done, but you've got different people voting in that situation. If the boundaries are contiguous, the same people vote. On the issue of the liens, just one more thing. The Fremont County Treasurer said, hey, why are you guys giving these guys the ability to do a lien? He says, we do tax sales, and if you muck it up with a lien, that will possibly weaken the statute. So we'll look at liens, we'll talk about it, and there may be an amendment about that. I'm just showing that out, that was something we learned about today. And I think the Fort Manager did a great job. But you can understand how liens actually maybe would weaken the process if it gets ahead of that and messes up the tax sale process. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Further discussion?
Question
haven't been called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 6, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Aye.
Senate File 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 20. The reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File 20, sponsored by Senator Floyd Escobel, text-based communications prohibited while driving. Referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report. They do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 20, and to explain this fine bill, the main sponsor, Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you Senator Feinstein.
Please talk into your mic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask for your favorable recommendation on Senate File Number 20. And this piece of legislation prohibits text-based communications while driving. As was stated by the Chairman of the Transportation Committee, it passed the committee with a unanimous vote. Testimony given during the committee was all in favor of passing this bill, with the exception of one person who felt that that a reasonable, prudent person could text while driving, but that was the only opposition to the bill. The other people that were there were members from the oil and gas industry, there were members from the trucking industry, from the highway patrol, and members, an individual from the communications industry. They were all supportive of this bill. In addition, part of the testimony was that the purpose of this bill is to change the culture of our driving habits. And you've seen part of this change of culture with seat belts, with baby seats, with drunken driving laws, DUI laws. You know, there were some years back that to use a seat belt was, well, cars didn't have seat belts, certainly didn't have seats for children. And there were a lot of other things, but in the meantime, that culture has changed to the point that seat belts are quite common. You don't drive a car with children in it unless they're in a approved child safety restraint. So part of this is to change the culture. In addition, Mr. Chairman, you know, in the time that it took me to get a cup of coffee, take a drink, approximately 5-6 seconds passed. If you're driving 70 miles an hour, that amounts to approximately 600 feet that you've traveled. That's 2 football fields. A lot can happen in those 5 or 6 seconds if you're driving 70 miles an hour. And seems my experience I've had on some of the highways is that nobody drives 70 miles an hour. They drive quite a bit faster. In addition, in terms of what this bill would affect, you know, those individuals that are more accustomed to communicating with these electronic devices, which are more of our youthful drivers. But interestingly enough, one of the groups that's heavily in favor of this is the Code of Youth for Justice group. And there's a handout on your desks, which I thought was very well done. And what they mentioned is that there are 3 main types of distraction: visual, manual, and cognitive. Visual, taking your eyes off the road. Manual, taking your hands off the wheel. Cognitive, taking your mind off what you are doing. While all distractions can endanger a driver's safety, texting is the most alarming because it involves all 3. And that's from a youth group that's heavily in favor of that. In addition, a recent article in the Interchange, Wyoming Department of Transportation publication, the main issue has to do with distracted driving. I think you've all received a copy of this. And I'll just read one of the first sentences, first paragraph. Think you're invincible? Think again. Put down your cell phone. Don't play with the radio station knobs. And for goodness sakes, don't text message the next time you drive. So, Mr. Chairman, I think there's quite a bit of support for this bill. It's a safety issue type of thing. And that's basically what it refers to, is just prohibits the use of texting while driving. There are some exceptions, and those exceptions basically have to do with, you know, you can communicate any way you wish with whomever you want as long as you're lawfully parked, or if you're trying to contact an emergency response vehicle. You know, so that's the meat and bones of the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I ask for your favorable vote. Oh, I might add, Mr. Chairman, that there was an argument made that the present statute on careless driving could probably cover this. According to the Highway Patrol, this texting bill is more specific. It basically states want to compare it or associate it with the careless driving statutes, it would basically say that driving and texting is not reasonable or prudent. And I was going to say that for anyone to oppose this piece of legislation would not be reasonable or prudent, but I'm not going to say that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
You're very discreet, Senator. Discussion. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions, and I like the idea. But on the penalties, if you go back and look, it's 200, 300, and 500 on first, second, and third, and up to 6 months in jail on the third. And it's primary offense. So if my kids, who seem to think that they're experts at this, have their hand down here where the officer can't see it and they're texting, I mean, it's kind of hard to enforce. So you know, the officer's actually going to have to see the cell phone up here to pull them over, and then the only way that they can prove that they didn't do it was pull the phone records to show that at that particular timestamp they weren't texting. Am I reading that right?
That's my understanding.
Senator Estabell.
That's my understanding, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the senator from Natrona County actually raises a good point because, for instance, I don't text. I've got little sausage fingers that don't allow to do that. But I do have a cell phone, and speaking on a cell phone while you're in a car driving is legal. So what if I'm like this and I'm dialing a number? How does a police officer know if I'm texting or if I'm dialing a number which is legal?
Senator Esquivel.
Senator Burns, I really don't have a very good answer for you. Maybe some of my colleagues that are more electronically gifted might be able to give you a better answer than I could.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just as a whoever's going to answer that question, the follow-on, I think, to that is, if that happens, does that create probable cause when you're dialing a telephone, which is a legal activity, does that create probable cause to then access the records, the phone records, that individuals have to determine whether or not they were texting or whether they were making a telephone call?
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In no way am I going to get into the legal aspect of that, whether that's probable cause or not. But I will tell you that since it's date stamped in time, should the records be brought in the court, it would show whether you made a phone call or whether you were doing, using electronic wireless communication device to write, send, or read a text-based communications. So that would differentiate between it being a phone call and it being an actual text message. That would answer, I hope, the good senator from Sheridan's question. I cannot answer exactly what is probable cause, what could be subpoenaed for a court case.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just a continuation on along that same line. I'll get a phone call, and sometimes it's a phone call, and sometimes it's a text. And sometimes the ring is the same. So if it's ringing, I answer it, which is perfectly legal, and I see that it's a text message. Am I now breaking the law by seeing that it's a text message?
Senator Von Flater.
I'll do my best on this one, Mr. Chairman. I would say that there's a button on your phone that allows you to have a ring for something and a buzz for another thing, or a different buzz for one for the other. And if you're actually reading the text message, according to this bill, yes. If it is truly a phone call, no, you're not in violation. But if you can get your ear to read it, and they could never catch you for that.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, a question over on page 2, line 17, emergency responder. And specifically, I'm asking whether brand inspectors are emergency responders. And the reason why I ask is oftentimes brand inspectors are a long ways from anywhere, and you can't get cell phone, but you can always get a text message. Text messaging actually goes through much more reliably than what a cell phone service does. Sometimes, if they're, for example, a livestock on a state highway, the person that gets contacted is the brand inspector. Where do they fall into this? We don't often think of them as emergency responders, but there again, they are doing it in an official capacity. And like I say, oftentimes where they're at, text messaging is reliable, cellular phone is not. Do they fall under that category of emergency responder? They're not normally classified as such, although they are brilliant folks.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, well, first of all, I guess there'd be a big question as to whether a law enforcement officer would be available to see anyone in that position texting, and as to whether they'd be considered an emergency responder. You know, I think if I was a police officer, I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. Police officers, law enforcement has a certain area of discretion. And just like with the speed limits, we all know the speed limits are 75 miles an hour on the highways. And if anyone in this body has not violated that particular law, I would ask you to stand up. I think, and we know that that law is broken on a regular basis. People do 76, 77, 78 miles an hour, and unless it gets to a point that it's a little bit beyond that scope, and there's a highway patrolman available, you know, that's when the action takes place. We know that, you know, we can't have highway patrol or a law enforcement officer on every corner. But I think most people, most drivers, once they know that something is illegal, that it's not reasonable, it's not prudent to drive while you're texting, will obey the law. In regard to the senator from Natrona County, I would imagine that if a police officer, given the right circumstances, sees someone that he reasonably believes is texting, would have reasonable cause to pull the individual over. I think it'd be akin to given the circumstances, you see someone drinking from a can of Coca-Cola, can of Pepsi, whatever it might be. But because of the situation, the time of night, the area, the way the person is driving, an officer might very well think the person is driving while drinking, although it might later show that the person was not drinking alcohol, but it would give probable cause to maybe look for other illicit activities. So with that, I hope this answers some of the questions and some of the concerns. I might add, Mr. Chairman, as long as I was given this opportunity, might add that to pass this law, I think, will help many of our young drivers, especially if they move into the field of federal employment or commercial driving, because there was recently an executive order which has established a policy by the Department of Transportation that basically bans texting while driving, whether it's a government vehicle or a government lease vehicle or someone working as a contractor, and the penalties can be pretty severe. It does state that there's failure to comply with this order may result in disciplinary action, which could be dismissal. And I'd hate to see one of our young drivers get a good job with the federal government, whatever, and then soon thereafter lose that
employment simply because of a habit that the person didn't break soon enough. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I ask the body to vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I'd have, basically, I think we looked at it, that it's almost unenforceable, and we haven't been able, and there's no way to determine probable cause. And I was wondering from the members of the committee whether there is any discussion about this being a secondary offense.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the good senator from the east side of the state, that's exactly the heartburn that was discussed in committee. And, in fact, we received testimony from Colonel Sam Powell of the department who indicated to us that, quite frankly, he did see a lot of difficulty with the enforcement of this particular law were it to be put in place. I think really what the committee arrived at is the fact that this is more of a billboard bill than it is an enforceable law. That's something I think each one of us will just have to wrestle with ourselves. But I do think there is some merit to the fact that we are sending a message that in the state of Wyoming it's an illegal practice.
Senator Hassert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we have numerous laws, and you can look at just a lot of different areas of law that are tough to enforce. You know, we have littering laws, and yet you see, and one of my pet peeves is those that drive big rigs along the interstate that will toss bottles out of that contain some liquid that is rather offensive. And, you know, if they get caught doing that, it's just a matter of, you know, we have laws to protect that, and we have laws in a lot of different areas, and these are the kind of discussions that come up an awful lot. Yes, they are tough to enforce, but it also gives the officer additional tools, to work with. You know, and I'm going to stand here and say that I'm probably one of the most guilty people of texting while driving, and I can tell you that. You know, I would hope, you know, and would a law stop me? It would certainly slow me down from doing these kind of things. You know, I have noticed that I have been, you know, erratically driving while texting. I've had coworkers comment, you know, saying things like, well, you know, it looked like a drunk driver out there and I'm on the phone texting. I need to stop that. And, you know, we need to send a message that this is a dangerous thing to do. And I'm just, in support of it. But don't let the fact, yes, it's definitely tough to enforce. But we have an awful lot of laws out there that are tough to enforce. But it just gives them an additional tool to work with.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a follow-up to the senator from Natrona, while Colonel Powell acknowledged that, yes, it would be very difficult to enforce, his final conclusion, we asked him, what's the final thought here? Do we really need this? And he felt that it was time for Wyoming to have this law in place and have something to work with.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, please stop me before I text again, I guess is the message there. I'm for this bill, and I will vote for it. And I don't mean to pick it apart, but I am curious, reflecting on the question from the good senator from Johnson County, is the emergency responder, is that term defined in statute, or is that a term of art? I'm just kind of curious. I noticed our doctor of the day is here gracing us with her presence this afternoon. Would she be an emergency responder in some cases and in some cases not, depending on what the text is? And therefore, would she be exempt or not the way this law would be enforced?
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, in regard to the question asked by a good senator from Johnson County and good senator from Sheridan County, in order to answer that question, I'd have to look at the statutes and find out. But as stated previously, I think if
if there was an emergency and I called the doctor of the day or someone else that I considered an emergency responder, I would think that the law enforcement or the judge hearing the case, if it got that far, would take some of that into consideration and use a certain amount of discretion. But I can look to, I can have those answers for you. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to belabor this point, and I like the idea of the bill. The last 2 years, I walked across one of the busiest intersections in my part of in my town, and in doing that and also being run over by a truck a few years ago while crossing the street in a crosswalk with the light, I've become more attuned to this. So you watch, and it's a real problem. There's days, and as I've walked to and from my office, and I have to park on one side of the intersection, walk across my office to the other part of the intersection. There's days when one in two people are tied up on their cell phones as they turn left, as they barely miss pedestrians, as they barely miss other cars. It's a really big problem, and I hope that we can resolve this and move it forward and resolve some of these problems today. But the other side of that is there's real live consequences with this bill. I mean, we have the opportunity for a third or fourth offense, 6 months in jail. We have the opportunity that you're doing a perfectly legal, what apparently is legal, still legal. You could be texting on your phone. If that creates probable cause for the government to look at my telephone records, now they can look at my telephone records with other situations when I've committed a crime or they believe I've committed a crime. They have access to those telephone records, but not just willy-nilly. And so there's real live consequences that come with this bill, and I would, if it's a billboard bill, then let's make it with billboard consequences. If it's a paper bill, it's a statement of policy, let's do that. But let's create some protections that we don't lose some of the civil liberties that we are potentially giving away with this bill. And so I'd like to see it move forward. I'll certainly vote aye today, but I'd like to see some of those things addressed and taken seriously because I think they are serious matters. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we need to also consider a bill like this. If it's the law that it's against the law to text and you have an accident, now that's when this law is going to come into place. Probably nobody will get picked up for texting and driving down the street necessarily, but you get an accident. And somebody will say, well, what were you doing? What caused it? You know, well, I was texting. Boom. Now we have liability problems. Now we've got ambulance chasers. We've got a lot of insurance considerations. You were breaking the law when you had this accident. You ran over this person. Okay, that changes the legal status of that driver if you're doing something against the law when you do the duty. So it has a lot more, I think that would be the thing that we ought to consider in a law like this.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, what we're talking about here is something that isn't safe to do. And I was in this body along with the good senator from Natrona County. We've been here way too long. When we debated seatbelts. And we had extensive debates on seatbelts. And, boy, it was difficult. Now when you drive down the highway, you see the signs out there. Buckle up. It's the law. And the effectiveness of seatbelts has carried itself into, in 2009, we had less fatalities than we had in 2008. People buckle up because it's against the law not to. This is a safety matter. This is a kid's issue. We have young drivers out there that start driving at 16. You ever seen one of those kids, one of those text deals? It's incredible. Faster than a speeding bullet. And they are not tuned up to drive that well yet. They don't have experience driving. You mix in the opportunity for them to be able to text while they're learning how to drive, and you got a problem. If you're driving between Cody and Shoshone or someplace out there in the wide open, and you need to text somebody, pull off. I do it all the time with my cell phone because the signal's not consistent. Just pull over if you want to text somebody. So I'd urge you to move this bill forward. This is a very, very important piece of legislation. It's time to do it. Passed out of here last year. Ran into some problems, you know, in the building here someplace. So I urge you to support this bill. It's a serious thing. The seatbelt thing works. Works for everybody out there. I always put mine on the highway. Sometimes not in the city, but always on the highway. Send the message to our young people that this is about safety. That's what it's all about.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to double-check something on page 1, line 15. It said, no person shall operate a motor vehicle, but it doesn't say a motor vehicle upon the highways or roads of the state of Wyoming. And I'm just wondering if you're texting someplace else, like out on your ranch driving, whether you're in violation of the law. And so if you could have an answer for me on that before second reading, I'd appreciate it, or if somebody has it now.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can give my colleague back there a good example of not on the highway. I'm related to a young man who was in the high school parking lot, merged over into a lane to turn right, and another car came from out of his rearview mirror point of view, caught his bumper, or his bumper caught the side of the car, and put a crease all the way across the car. When he threw it in park and bailed out to go make sure that the other driver was okay, she was texting. And so now the young man went to court, pled not guilty at his hearing. He's going to have to go to a hearing, and most likely is going to have to subpoena the cell phone records to see if that young lady was really texting. I agree with the senator from Cody. This is the time to do this, and if it doesn't make any difference whether you're on the roads, highways of Wyoming, you're in a parking lot, you're in, you know, driving out of your driveway, and you're texting, and there's other cars around there, you're a danger to the road. And this, you know, we got some, there's obviously things that we're going to have to work out of here. I'd hate to have to write the rules and regs for this, but it's time to do it, and I hope we all vote yes.
Further discussion. Is there further discussion? Okay, question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion, then when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 20, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole, and before we go on to the next one, I'm going to give myself the privilege of the floor. President Hines is right on these microphones. It takes a while for them to spool up after you click it. So what I'm doing is making sure that your mic is on before I call you so that all of your wisdom is apparent throughout the Internet. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 40. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 40, sponsored by Senator Cooper, Establishment of Highways. It was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, whom reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that they do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 40, and I yield the floor to the main sponsor, Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I just about hate to even bring the word highways up after the last discussion we just had here. So, but I'll go ahead and trudge forward. In order for you, the members of the body, I guess, to understand this bill a little bit, I probably need to have you kind of either think about, or if you have a piece of paper and your pen available, draw a timeline. And at the left side of the timeline, you need to write the year 1866 in there. And then on the far end of the timeline, you need to write the year 2004. And somewhere along the line, moving from left to right, you need to write the year 1924 in there. And then move up a little bit further and write the year Okay, now I'm going to kind of explain the history of this, and we'll explain this bill a little bit to you. In 1866, the U.S. Congress passed what they called the Mining Act, and in the Mining Act, they had a law called RS-2477, which stands for Revised Statute 2477, which permitted the counties to establish and to build roads across public lands because they understood that in the development of the West, there was going to have to be roads built, or the western part of the United States would never be able to develop into what it is today. And they had that great wisdom over 110 years ago. Well, move along now on that continuum of that line to 1924. For some reason, in 1924, the legislative body of this state decided that they weren't going to let the counties establish any more roads across public lands. So they passed a law in 1924 that said, if you haven't established any public roads across public lands in this state, you will forever forfeit that ability to do that. So that ended it. However, the federal law that was started in 1866 continued on. Other states in the West continued to create roads across public lands all the way up until 1976. In 1976, they passed the FLTMA law that froze all of those possible roads on public lands from ever being created from that point forward. The enactment was frozen. So now we move ahead to the year 2004. In 2004, Sublette County went to court to try to have a road dedicated on public land that went to a ranch. It was established in around either 1944 or 46, somewhere in that area, because when they tried to establish the road, the BLM said, no, you can't do that because of the ruling in 1976. All those roads were frozen from those that point forward. So they took it to court, federal court, and the federal court judge said, ruled against them and said, the BLM is absolutely correct. You cannot create any more roads across public lands. So, however, on the side, he talked to some of the lawyers a little bit later and said, you know, even if he had ruled in favor of Sublette County being able to create that road, he said, you couldn't build the road anyway. And the reason you couldn't build the road, because in 1924, this legislature stopped the ability for any county to create roads across public lands. You would have had to have that changed. So now we got a gap between 1924 and 1976 where no roads could be created in a state. Even if a federal judge had passed a law saying, yeah, you can go ahead and do that, forget the 1976 law, go ahead and do it. We couldn't do it without coming to this legislature and have the law changed. They couldn't do it. So this law, this bill that I am proposing here, all it does is it does not trump the federal 1976 decision at all. We can't trump federal law with state law anyway. But it does. If, in fact, in any point in time in the future that they ever decide to change this, and the only way it would ever be changed, the 1976 law, the counties or the state would have to go back to the federal government and go to the Congress of the United States and say, hey, we'd like this law changed. And I don't think that's going to happen, but in case it could. However, they could come up with other ways. But in the meantime, if ever there was a possibility for counties to establish roads across public lands, they couldn't do it because we passed this 1924 law. All this does is allow that law to move forward to 1976, not beyond that. This law does not allow you to build roads across wilderness areas, roadless areas, or anything else. Those are already enacted in law by the United States Congress, and you can't do that anyway. As far as permittees go and people who graze out there, they have to be given right-of-ways to be able to get into their land for grazing and so forth, so that's not a part of this bill. So that's what this bill is all about. Now, I do understand there is some concerns for the possibility, if you open up, if in fact the federal government would come back someday and say, oh, yeah, we're going to change our mind, we're going to do away with the 1976 law, and we're going to allow counties now to build roads across public lands. If that ever happens, which I doubt, then this law would be in place for them. But still, I can understand some of the concerns because we have in our laws here, actually under Title 24 in 249101, it does say, in fact, that you can, the county can declare roads for the public convenience or for cost or all kinds of things. So maybe if there was a possibility in the future that somebody would open up a road across the public land and it went to a property that was next to it, it's that somebody might say, by golly, this is a shorter way to get to the highway. We need to have the commissioners come in and declare this road, and then we'll go under 249101 and try to get that land, that road continued across this old piece of, or this private piece of property. So I understand that concern. But this law doesn't really trump that federal law by any means. The only way this law would ever be able to be enacted is if the federal government come back and said, yeah, we'll open it up again for counties to be able to do this. But right now under FLTMA, the reason the counties don't like to do that at all, because it's a very expensive process. It puts you under NEPA and under the EIS system, and it costs a whole bunch of money to even think about creating a road that's maybe even a mile long. So it's kind of very much a discouraging process. But there is roads still allowed to be built across public land, across private lands under a separate act. This is for public lands only. And with that, I'd ask for your favorable, when I stand for questions, or favorable vote.
Is there further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's always a wonderful thing to see this old friend come back. I've been here 18 years now, and this must be number 19. Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful old friend. Folks, make no mistake, this is the takings. And let's recall where it's coming from. Per capita, the wealthiest county, maybe in the nation, but certainly in this state. There's two ways to get a federal law overturned. If you're a county that is extremely wealthy, like Sublette, you go hire a set of attorneys, and you go to federal court, and you get the law overturned. You don't go back to Washington. You go hire really good attorneys, and then you come in, and you'll get that law overturned. That's the way it works. They have no intention of spending their money lobbying Washington. They're going to go hire an attorney to get it done. I mean, they've said as much. I think it was on the 11th time this bill came back. They said that's the way they were going to do it, and they're even a richer county now. What happens in actual practice with this? And you all know I'm a landowner. I have federal ground. What happens is, if you go in and pass this, they come in and declare what was supposedly, it can be something like the Bozeman Trail, and say, that's a road. By golly, wagons went on there. And look at the tracks it left. And it may or may not be, it may be because I trained my cows to walk side by side, make it look like a road. But that's what they do. But guess what happens in the course of going across that public land and they hit my deeded ground? Goes right on through. I have no recourse. No recourse at all. That's what this bill does. It's a takings bill. It's a takings bill for the benefit of one single county. And, unfortunately, a very wealthy county. But that's what the plan is. The plan in Sublette County is let's go to court. And they can afford the best there is. So make no mistake, when you vote for this, there's a reason. It has been defeated in this body year after year because the state of Wyoming and the citizens thereof value private property. And this is an assault on that private property. And that's all it is, plain and simple.
Further discussion. Senator Cooper.
Oh, well, Mr. Chairman, the good senator and I from the good senator from Johnson County have, I guess, been down this road. Oh, excuse me, that's a pun before. As far as the takings go, I'm not sure about that, but I'm certainly not sure about what the another county may do in the state, whether it's sublet or some other county, as far as what actions they have. No crystal ball to know about that. But in a way, sometimes when we think about what was just mentioned, is it's kind of like, to me, like taking a pot of honey and setting it down here in the middle of a street down here and thinking that some black bear is going to show up out of the mountains down here to get the honey. We really don't know that. I mean, as far as takings go, I really can't say this has only to do with public lands. Now, I do understand where if you build a road, possibly, or if a county had the possibility of establishing a road across a piece of public land that may be abutted up against a piece of private land, and somebody went, and it was an old road, like it was mentioned by the good senator from Johnson County, where, you know, it's, somebody says, well, it's a shorter road out to the highway, maybe I'd like to have the commissioners build that road, and then I'll continue through the private property road process and build it across his land. I don't know that. I mean, it's speculation, as far as I'm concerned, whether somebody would even do that or want to do that. I can't see where this bill would take anybody's land, because if you're taking anybody's land, you're taking federal public land. So I don't see where it says anything about taking private property. However, maybe there's something there more amazing and more magic than I know. But that's about all I can say about that part of the question.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I will say I'm a landowner as well, and got considerable private land and all mixed in with public land, both federal and state. And frankly, I can't see anything in this bill, and maybe I'm totally missing something, but I can't see anything in this bill that affects roads across private land. This has to do with public land, and I think it's important that we pass this bill. Now, the feds are gradually trying to lock the public land up to keep the public off it. And that's inappropriate. And this bill is a small step trying to counter that so that we can take advantage of roads that were established on the public land. So I don't see any threat. I don't see any takings. I don't see any threat to private landowners here. Maybe I'm totally missing something, but if you look on page 2, lines 8 through 10, where the new language is, it talks to public lands. So I would urge the Senate to adopt the bill.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure. I've been listening to this discussion. I still haven't heard of a definition of road. What is a road? A road in 1866 is quite a bit different than in 1966, and it's quite a bit different than today. And that's the problem. You know, when we think of roads, we're thinking of something that everybody can pretty well define and say, okay, you know, that's a road. But not necessarily going all the way back into the 19th century, which this certainly does. You know, for instance, I lived up on South Pass and in South Pass City for 7 years. And the landownership around that town has changed just in the last couple of years because we've accepted some of that federal land. But before then, there were a lot of mining roads that went to mines with private residences right smack through the middle of that historic site. And you could see the old two tracks, you know, from those ore carts, you know, going down along a stream, and that was a road back then. You wouldn't recognize it as now. I wouldn't even take my four-wheel drive pickup truck on some of those things. But someone could come along, say that that's a road, and blade right down through the middle of that historic site, half of which was federal land at that particular time, regardless of any other use, in order to go down to a mine site that they happened to pick up for a song and they wanted to restore the old cabin up there. This is what this gets to. It's a blank check for anyone who can document that a vehicle or a wagon at some point went across this piece of federal land, and it's going to affect all the other lands around it, regardless of whether it's private land or whether it's railroad land or doesn't matter. It's going to affect it at some point. So this does open it wide up and makes it a blank check. And until we define exactly what a road is, we're going to let the courts do that.
Senator Cooper.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, to the good senator from Albany County. First of all, I don't, unless I misunderstood the question and the comment there, is that, first of all, the counties or commissioners are not going to be plowing a road across a historic site. I mean, it's just not going to happen, okay? Particularly if it's even if it's a federal public site, a state public site, or even a local public site. They're just not going to do that. Now, we have, I don't know exactly where it is and such, but I believe there is a description or a definition of road or roads. Now, the way counties do it, they have about, I think, four or five classifications of road. And you're right, it does start with a two-track, literally. Commissioners can dedicate a two-track as being a public right-of-way or road, and that has happened on occasion, particularly for those roads going into agricultural-type things where you may have a hay meadow or something in there inside of an area, and those roads eventually, although they're not maintained usually, because it's not required that they maintain those type of roads, but then they go on up into what they call a primary road, primary county road, a secondary county road, and you have pioneer type roads. That would be the two track. There's four or five different designations out there that they can actually use. And what it has to do with more than anything is the type of maintenance that they do on those roads. I mean, some of the roads go everywhere from no maintenance up to extreme, you know, new overlays of asphalt and so forth. But I believe there is a description of road in there some ways. And it does go all the way down to, like I say, to two tracks. But we're not going to be building any roads across historic sites and those type of things that I mentioned, wilderness areas or any of those others. That's just not going to happen.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion, and when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 40, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed. Thanks, guys. Senate File 40 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 3, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. Apiary Laws. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Geis.
I move when the Committee of the Whole write and report that Senate File 3 do pass. I'd also like to have you read in the Standing Committee amendments, and then I'll move those to...
Senate File 3, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 13, after, insert, and.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendments and yield the floor to Senator Jennings.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill came to us in the interim, and all the busy bees in the state got together and decided it has been 27 years since they had anything updated on their apiaries and what they need to do. And the things that they really found out that they needed was our bees are snowbirds, because when it gets wintertime around here, they all pack up on the back of a semi
and they put a big net around out around all the hives, and they drive off to other places in the country where it stays warm. And then when it gets spring in Wyoming, they all get back on that semi-truck, and they throw the net back around them, and they come back to Wyoming. And it's really, if you ever have the opportunity to get behind one of these trucks, it's amazing, because and we did this year. You pull up behind the truck, it's usually not going as fast as the rest of the traffic, and you notice that it's beehives, then you notice there's this net, and then you notice there's bees just buzzing all around it, driving down the road. Some of them are inside the net, a couple of them are outside the net, and there was that one that hit the windshield. But it, as they go back and forth, they need a spot to land. And so what they're asking for is that we establish these holding yards. So as they come back into the state, you can park in a holding yard, and it's got to be approved by the Department of Ag and everything. They pull into this holding yard, and then as their contracts for pollination come in and out, they spend a couple months moving the hives in and out of the holding yard so that they can get out there and set the bees out there where they're supposed to do their job and gather all the pollen and pollinate all the flowers and the alfalfa and all that kind of stuff, and then move back in. So that's what they're looking for. As they get ready to snowbird it back to the warm weather at the end of the season, then they want that holding yard so that they can get them all together, get them all packed up, and hit the road. Now, the other thing that they found out is that the bees got little mites. I mean, your bee and a mite on the bee must be really little. But they have these little mites, and they've got some diseases and other bugs that travel on the bees. And they need to treat them and spray them. So they want another yard out here that they can set up out in an area where they can treat the bees. So I guess you'll have your holding yard, and then you'll have your doctoring yard over here so you can spray them and keep them going. As we saw this bill in committee over the interim, we looked at it, and then all the beekeepers got together, and as you can see with the amendments, they were some busy bees out there trying to put this amendment together. But it doesn't really change the bill that much, but it does strengthen the areas, changes some terminology where they want the, like we'll go through it a little bit here. If you go down to page 5, line 8, they want to take out bees and put in life cycle. And it's things like that that make it more to the definition of what they're doing. Then they want to add colony, which means that bees, hive, and all the equipment in the connection with the hive. And when these bees snowbird it back to California and whatnot, the whole colony gets loaded on the truck. So that's why they want that kind of definition in there. And you can go see where, as you go there, page 7, we have an insert there that talks about the certificates and the diseases and how they want to treat them. And as you go down in there, the section 11.7.202, you see there's some changes on there, which is just basic cleanup language. Then on page 2 of the amendment, 11.7.205, you can see where we've got the hobbyist beekeepers. So I guess it's if you want a hive or two out there to create a colony to make your own honey. Now, I did miss the part where I don't know where the hobbyists are snowbird bees, but there's some changes in there for the parasites and whatnot. We talk about areas of how close you can be when you treat and when you have a new colony. So as you go through there, you'll see that the amendment, Mr. Chairman, is really just cleanup language. And I'd like the amendment's been moved, and I'd like to call for the question on the amendment at this time.
Discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 3 has passed. Back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Is there discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate
Senate file number 10, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks, Bear River State Park. It was referred to committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. That reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park. Mr. Chairman, for the last interim, the Committee number 6, TRW, among other things, was charged with, under State Parks and Cultural Resources, that was priority 2C, general land management issues, including review of the department's efforts to identify and properly record its holdings, boundary descriptions in statutes, and flexibility in land management and the site criteria process. Mr. Chairman, that's what the next three bills actually deal with. And the first one, Senate file number 10, will be explained at your pleasure by the good senator from Casper.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment on this, and I move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10, and has to be read in.
Senate File 10, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1, delete parks, insert lands.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is proof that things do fall through the cracks. Basically, what happened is... back in the 80s, late 80s, we had an agreement between the state hospital and the State Parks and Cultural Resources and a whole bunch of other folks and said, let's take the land from the state hospital, which they weren't used, and you should be able to see this on that handout in your box, and make the new Bear River land or the Bear River Park out of State Park out of it. So they did. And we've had that park down there for all these years, and everything's gone great. And then, as my good chairman mentioned, we in the interim we had a study going on. We found out that we've never moved the park. It still belongs to the, or supposed to belong to the state hospital. State parks have been taking care of it. So what Senate File 10 will do is provide for the transfer of the title of 280 acres of land included in the Bear River State Park to State Parks and Cultural Resources. Once the transfer is authorized, State Parks will work with the Office of State Land and Investments to complete a deed transfer from the Board of Charities and Reform State Hospital to the State Parks and Cultural Resources. So as you look at that, that's that simple. Mr. Chairman, now I'd like to address the amendment. You notice in the amendment that we have page 1, line 1, is a simple change. We want to strike parks and add land. The Parks Division, and this is said that we've got too many descriptions around state parks, and we have other things involved, and we want to just kind of standardize to, say, lands and all these different areas instead of state parks. And then, as you notice, we on page 1, line 7 through 13, we want to delete that and replace it with the amendments that you have there. And what we're doing is we're describing the legal description of the land so we can make the transfer. In a few minutes, you'll see another area where we're going to ask to change this in a different fashion after we do this. But we've been assured that we have to put this in there to make the transfer legal. So, Mr. Chairman, at this point, I'd ask a question on the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, on the amendment, looking at the legal description, the question is this part of the trust land that was given to the state hospital as part of the act of admission?
Senator Jennings. Anybody?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. Mr. Chairman, I believe that I don't believe that came up in our discussion. I'd like to refer to my chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I can say with great authority that I don't know.
But, Mr. Chairman, I can guarantee you we should know by tomorrow.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, it'd be great. And let me suggest that there's a very specific process. If you do find it's part of the trust land, I don't know what the legislation in 1987 said, but to take land out of that trust that was granted in the act of admission is a very specific process. And if you'll note, the 1987 law doesn't convey title. It conveys administration. That's why I believe it's part of the trust land. There's a way to get around that. Taking land out of that trust is extremely complicated. And I would ask the sponsors of the bill if they would check on that and bring it back to us tomorrow. If it is part of that trust, I think this bill has a ways to go, including, I think, back to Washington.
Senator Jennings, Senator Larson.
In addition, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know that it matters, but when this was done, I don't believe it was an oversight at all. I believe it was done because it was part of the state hospital land. They did not know if they were going to have any future needs, but they did. The agreement was that the parks could take it, use it, put it in, and then we could see further down the road whether, in fact, the state hospital was going to perhaps need land or need to trade the land or do whatever. So I don't think that affects it one way or the other, but it was not an oversight. It was done deliberately to let them use it, see how it all worked out, and see what was going to happen.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if it does prove to be trust land and there hasn't been adequate consideration given, then we have a problem. It's not a complicated process. The issue came up when we established the Edna Kimball Wilkins State Park, which was done on trust land. And it was my bill, so I'm aware of it. What we had to do was pay fair market value to the trust fund, and that was my memory is that's all it took. But you did have to get the payment made, and we didn't have to involve Washington in anything, but you did have to pay the price.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and understand, and I agree with my colleague from Natrona County, if it's a Section 16 and 36, which we often call trust land, this is a different critter entirely. This was land that was ceded. The state hospital got some. The penitentiary got some. The University of Wyoming got some. And it was, the outfit over in Lander that's got a really long title. We don't call it the training school anymore. It's a different title than that. Yeah, Collective Resources School or something like that. Life Easement Center, yeah. But this is different than that. If it's part of that, And those are trusts for those institutions to establish them, strange enough, right along the UP, most of them. And let me make a suggestion. If you're going to investigate this, the way to do it may be not to convey title, but convey a long-term lease. The proceeds of that lease go then into the State Hospital Trust, which is a separate trust. It's out there. It does stuff for the state hospital. I would suggest that may be the route you want to go to if it is part of that state hospital trust. It's just like the university's trust ground, the prison had trust ground, and the comfort station over in Lander had trust ground. And they're very different than what we can, the 16s and 36s in each township, not the same critter at all.
Senator Elliott.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the question posed by the senator from Johnson County, I'm looking at the fact sheet that was distributed, and in the third paragraph, there is a reference to, quote, in addition, as this is institutional land, comma, not school trust land, we would need to work with the Office of State Land and Investment to consummate the deed transfer. It goes on to say this deed transfer has also been approved by the administrator of the state hospital. I don't know if that answers any of the questions that are there. I get the drift that perhaps it doesn't. But I just did want to call that to the attention of the senator. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, looking in the Act of Admission in item number 11, which is titled Federal Land Grants for Certain Purposes, you have the grant of 30,000 acres in Uinta County, support of an insane asylum, and then you have the last sentence in the paragraph says, provided that none of the lands granted by this act shall be sold for less than $10 per acre. So there is a provision in that that does contemplate the sale of these lands. And I think it may not be quite as complicated as is suggested, but I do think we're probably going to have to pay for it if we haven't already.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, these are good comments, and as chairman, I will investigate both aspects, both the act of admission, the State Hospital Trust, but also the MOU brought up by the good senator from Teton County as to whether how intentional leaving that out was.
Further discussion. Further discussion. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 10, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No, we never did.
We never did the amendment? Okay. Well, that's my mistake. Okay.
Introduced, and when I sat down, I asked for the question on the amendment.
I'm thinking.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe you ruled yet, so nobody's going to be upset. But I will point out that the good senator did make the amendment before it was the motion, before the amendment was read in. And really, you've got to have it read in first. So I think he ought to remake his motion. We've got to vote on it. And then we can vote on the main question if that's acceptable.
I am going to abide by the advice from the chief clerk. Senator Jennings, please move the amendment, and we will vote on it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on Senate File Number 10.
Discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10 has passed. We are back on Senate File 10. Further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 10, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 11. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number 11, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks Acquisition and Dispositions of Land.
It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Meyer. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 11. There are no amendments, and to further explain the bill, I would ask that you call on the good senator from Park County.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 11 is the follow-up bill to Senate File 10 that we just talked about. And the good chairman talked about the assignment by the Management Council to the TRW committee. The purpose of this bill is to give state parks and cultural resources authority to acquire, dispose of, designate, or remove designation for state outdoor recreational resources with legislative oversight. State parks and cultural resources has properties which are not practical to manage, as state parks or historic sites, due to access issues, limited size, or condition of the property. The properties we're going to talk about in the bill are the Big Sandy Pony Express Station, the J.D. Woodruff Cabin, Little Medicine Wheel and Arrow, Nancy Hanks Gravesite, and Rock Spring Stage Station. State Parks and Cultural Resources would like to explore transferring ownership of these types of properties to other entities, including local government, adjacent private landowners, and the Office of State Lands and Investment. Disposal of State Parks and Cultural Resources lands requires approval by the State Lands and Investment Board. Senate File 11 will provide the department with the authority for de minimis acquisitions, meaning lands of less than 5 acres, for disposal designation or removal of designation. State Parks and Cultural Resources would like to have the authority to efficiently and cost-effectively acquire or dispose of these small parcels. And I want to emphasize that at the end of the process, when they designate these pieces, they come back to the TRW committee for legislative oversight. Now, if you go to the bill, on page 4 is where the gist of the bill is. It says the department may acquire, dispose of, designate, or remove from designation any lands for outdoor recreation area facility without complying with provisions of Section E and F, which are the provisions to dispose of all lands. We're only talking about parcels of less than 5 acres. Paragraph little I gives you the definition for de minimis, which is less than 5 acres. Paragraph 2 little I, that's where it has to conform to the department's mission and strategic plan. Paragraph 3 little I, the action conforms to the provisions of the department's current master plan for the park or site. And paragraph 4, action is presented to the Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife Committee. As we talk about these parcels, just a breakdown of what these are, the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources has had little to no involvement in the lands listed in Table 2 since they were donated to the department beginning in the 1930s. Currently, 3 of the sites, Big Sandy, Rock Spring, and Rock Spring Stage Station, include markers and pullouts that are being maintained currently by local entities. 2 additional sites, Nancy Hanks Gravesite and Little Medicine Wheel and Arrow, have limited historic value. The final property, the J.D. Woodruff Cabin, is surrounded by private land and public access is not available. So I'd urge that you support the bill. This would allow state parks and cultural resources that opportunity to go out and deal with these small parcels that are no longer relevant to their mission or their plan. With that, I try to answer questions on Senate File 11.
Senator Bebaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on page 1, starting with line 15, and the stricken language. And what we're doing is we could have a situation where an outdoor recreation resource could be designated as a state park, public recreation ground, so on and so forth. We're striking that language. My question is, are we, by striking that language, taking away the ability of the state parks people to do something with those sites if they want to redesignate or remove?
Further discussion? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the good senator from Fremont County could repeat his question. I didn't really get the gist of what his question was.
Senator Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look on the bottom of page 1 and going over onto page 2, we're talking about taking out the language about the definition of a resource could be designated a state park, public recreation, so on and so forth. And if we strike that language, does that take away the ability of the state parks people to do what the rest of that part of the law says? That means to that they should no longer be designated, the recommendation for removal, so on and so forth. So are we taking them out of the statutes so the state parks people are not able to do anything with them because we've stricken that language?
Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, the answer to that question is no. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that language was removed was so that they could add or remove. They went to, if you look, what was stricken, and when you look down on line 3 of page 2, they went to a much more generic term, area and facility, because that way they can add or remove portions of parts that are already parts of state parks or not, or state historic sites. For instance, a good example is last year we actually had to take legislative action to add about, I think it was 80 square feet to Jim Bridger State Park, which right at the entrance where they put up the statue. That's actually part of the state park now, but we had to take legislative action to do that. The removal of the language state park, public recreation ground, historic park is, I don't know that it's actually necessary. I think what they did was just change the language to be more of a catch-all it's one of those things where you want to include as many things as you can in there, and by being specific in there, they may actually exclude areas that they want. A good example of that is something like the Woodruff Cabin. I think that's an historic site. I don't know. Another is the Hank's Grave. They don't even know if that's real or who that person may be. The little that the senator from Cody mentioned, the little medicine wheel, they don't know if that's a fake or if it's real. It may not have any historical significance. I think they also wanted to remove that language and make it more inclusive because a good example of what they want to do, and I think I mentioned this during the introduction statement on the bill, is, for instance, there's a historic cemetery by Story in Banner that's still active. They're running out of room. They want to purchase an additional 4 acres from state parks, which is part of the 1,200 that we authorized the purchase by state parks a few years ago as part of the Fort Phil Kearny and Fetterman Massacre site. And it's out of sight of the historic site itself, but actually some of the people who died at Fort Phil Kearny are currently buried there. So it has enormous historical importance, but right now it would not be listed under the previous description that was listed in here, but it would be listed under area and facility.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, over on looking at the bottom of page 4, lines 23 through 24, and then really the top of page 5, was there any discussion in the committee looking the Travel and Recreation and Historical Sites Committee gets informed of this. Was there any discussion about giving either approval or disapproving? It's great to be informed, but you really can't do anything about this. My question is, did the committee discuss whether they want to have final approval? Understand that you can take land away or dispose of land in this, and that's serious business. And depending where it is, it gets even more serious. And an agency, and understand, in a previous bill, we just read a letter from a guy who's an administrator that in essence has given away 280 acres. It's not his land. He doesn't care. I just wonder if there shouldn't be some oversight And did the committee discuss that? And it would be easy to bring a second reading amendment that after the word informational and approval would change the complexion of the oversight just a bit. Was there any discussion on that?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, there was no discussion on it, although there was quite a bit of thinking on it about me discussing with myself, but not aloud. And I didn't text it to anybody while I was driving down the road either.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, if that doesn't ease my concerns, nothing will.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, addressing the good senator's concern, yes, it was an issue that I thought about myself, but it caused to arise the question in my mind whether or not the an interim committee does or should have that authority to approve or disapprove something. You know, maybe I need something of a civics lesson. I don't know if an interim standing committee can do that or not.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I've sat here and looked at this, and I just have a question with the elimination of everything at the top of page 2 in those three lines. And I may not know what I'm talking about, but may recommend that any outdoor recreation area and facility, any outdoor recreation facility, but then we've eliminated historical sites, all of that kind of stuff. Under those definitions of outdoor recreation facility, do historical sites come underneath that? And I'll say this because I have a real concern about Wyoming losing its history. And I don't care if it's 5 feet of where somebody's been buried or 6 feet or what. We need to very seriously consider the history that we have here and not just willy-nilly kind of wipe it off the map. So a recreation facility, an area, are way, way different than our historical or our archaeological sites. So, you know, just make my mind at ease a little.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that the senator from Laramie County asked that question because I can impart some information I just learned a couple of days ago, was that recreation area is actually the generic term for all these. State parks, recreation areas, state historic sites, they're all fall within the language of recreation area. And I think that may also go further to answer the senator from Johnson County's question. I should have brought it up at the time, too. State parks and historic sites is not trying to necessarily get rid of anything that's actively being used. And as a matter of fact, if they're going to generally divest itself of a property, it's either a property that's not being used and there's questionable access to it, or they may, and this has come up too, negotiate with the local municipality or county for them to take it over and run it. And I believe that question has arisen with the Lander Cemetery, where there's a group there who takes care of that. The state doesn't really have the wherewithal to tend to it the way it should. And I may be wrong as far as the particular location goes, but I think that's what they have more in mind.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I too have some of the same concern that the senator from Johnson County brought up on, and I guess basically it boils down to giving an agency complete control on accepting or disposing of these small particles. But also another part of my concern is that 36-4, 104, 106, or anywhere else specify how the public would be notified ahead of time, because some of these may have importance to local communities, and they would maybe not even know about it if there isn't some avenue that the public would be notified. So that was one of my concerns.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too have some concerns, and I'm concerned that we're maybe dealing with a lack of research and knowledge. I don't know who Nancy Hanks was, but you indicated that neither do they or anybody else. These historic sites, I think, were given or accepted for a reason. And I would suspect it's local history of some kind. And to just kind of give them away, particularly the lady that's buried there, Nancy Hanks, are you going to rebury her? I don't know. But I think there needs to be a little more research. Maybe the department has it. Maybe the committee didn't get that. But these were given for a specific historical purpose by somebody at some time. And I think to give them away or whatever you're going to do with them without further research and trying to determine of what value they were and when they were, use is not the determinant factor, in my judgment, on a historic site. It may be on a recreation area. It may be on some of the other things, but use is not the determinant factor in a historic site, in my judgment. It's the history that was associated with it, and I think to do that without a little bit more insight as to why they were given, what they were, who Nancy Hanks is, and some things like that is improper. Now, eventually maybe they need to do that, but I think they need to do a little more research first to see why they're there, why they were given, what they were, and not just because they're not used.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps I could help out a little bit with that. After graduating from the University of Wyoming, my first job included looking after some of these historic sites, as well as 1,500 other things. And this cabinet behind me, behind my desk, had about 250 of these historic sites. And every once in a while, I turn around and look at them, and that's about as much attention as I could pay to them. Every once in a while, I want to go out there and take care of part of my other job with the State Historic Preservation Office. I would stop at some of these sites, and they're rather interesting. But they're really, quite frankly, across the board, there's no way that we could possibly preserve or take care of them. They're scattered all over the state of Wyoming. I inquired at that time, and this was, it was 30 years ago when I was in, had oversight of a lot of these things. And even then, at that time, folks weren't really quite sure how the state picked them up. But it wasn't that department. Eventually, other agencies would pick these sites up, and their dealings with the public would accept them. And then it would eventually get transferred over to the State Historic Preservation Office, which at that time was part of the Recreation Commission. Now, and then the Recreation Commission's holding and SHPO and all these things have been passed down to various agencies. So what I'm trying to say is that there are some valuable ones in there. And then others, you know, which really aren't so valuable. I think I heard from that list the Pointed Rock State Station that was ticked off. Now, that's a really neat stage station, and you'll see it on I-80. As you're heading into Point of Rocks, and you'll see the gas, if you're heading west, and you'll see the gas station over here on your right-hand side, but you look off that exit on the left-hand side along that bluff, and if the sun's hitting it just right, you can see that old stage station that's sitting over there on the Overland Trail. But that's not the original stage station. Unfortunately, that one got kicked in by some grazing and some other reasons long time ago. They just restored that, and they're thinking that it looked like that. And the roof that's on top of the thing has shingles on it, which they didn't have in the old days. So it's pretty neat, though. You stop there, and you get kind of a sense of it, but it's something that probably shouldn't be administered by the state, but more by a local historical society. So I think that's what they're asking to do in this bill, is to finally start going through these hundreds of historic sites that they've accumulated over the years and find out what's the best way to take care of them, because they can't. They don't have the people to do it. And one other thing which might help with the discussion and consideration, Mr. Chairman, is that we give this authority to the Wyoming State Museum, and they have some artifacts that are far more valuable than anything we're talking about in this bill, and they have authority to deaccession those anytime they want to. They don't have to come to the state legislature. like these folks do, you know, every time they want to get rid of an artifact. But because of the language in the statutes, they have to do it every time they want to take an action on one of these.
Further discussion? Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with what some of the statements were said a little while ago. You know, there was a reason that these sites were given to or dedicated to the state. You know, I would hate we're just going to be either destroying them, giving them away, or whatever the process that they go through, because I mean, there was an importance in history, and for that had a reason why those places were set aside like that. And even if they maybe aren't in that good a shape or anything, I mean, down the road someplace, I'm pretty sure we might regret either pawning these areas off or these places or not preserving them, even if we don't preserve them in a complete state, maybe, as was mentioned about the Point of Rock site. I'm very familiar with that site. But still, I mean, they were given to us for a reason, and the reason was because the people who gave those sites to us thought, I'm pretty sure, that we were going to preserve those sites. And we weren't going to give them away or sell them off or whatever. That's my piece.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, this is a policy decision by this body on this. As a matter of fact, of the three bills that we're dealing with, this one is the only one that really has a policy question in it. Most of the rest are, the other two are basically conforming or technical in nature. But I want to remind this body, first of all, from the last senator who spoke, we're not necessarily talking about just pawning off historic sites or getting rid of historic sites. This also gives them the authority to add historic sites or to benefit historic sites. And a good example is a discussion he and I had about the Granger, I think it's the Granger stage station. There's a mobile home park right next to that. That doesn't really lend a whole lot to the historic nature of it. But it's for sale, and it's for sale cheap. I think it's a half acre or something like that. Something like this, that state parks could go and grab up, get rid of the mobile home park so that the stage stop looks like it did. You have a historical shed view shed, the way that it used to be. That's the type of thing that this bill is aimed at. It also, the land that may be sold off isn't necessarily historical. As I said, the Story Banner Cemetery wants to get 4 acres. It's right now, the land they want to get is just cow pasture. It's out of sight of Fort Phil Kearny, and the cemetery itself is actually more historic than the surrounding land around it. The other point I wanted to make is there are a lot of historic sites in this state. The vast majority of them are not owned by us, not owned by the state in any way. And they're kept up much better locally by local interest groups or local landowners than the state has done it. The State Parks Department is trying to do everything it can to keep up the state parks and historic sites with limited resources. We're in hard times now. We're not going to be giving them a big boost in money. So I agree with the senator from Albany County. Let them do the job that they can do best at the locations they can do best. If they're going to divest themselves of a particular chunk of property, that doesn't mean that chunk of property is suddenly going to become a mobile home park or less historic. It may, in many cases, be better taken care of by the people they're divesting it to than the state currently can take care of it itself.
Further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 12. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 12, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes. Ayes, Senator Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 12. There is a standing committee amendment that I would ask to be read in now.
Senate File 12, Standing Committee Number 1, page 2, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would we'll come back to the Standing Committee amendment in a few moments. I would ask that you call on the good senator from the extreme western part of the state to for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is our final in the series of three. You're probably thinking, thank goodness.
It's been fun.
Senate File 12 designates state outdoor recreation areas in statute, requires legal descriptions by rule, and repeals legal descriptions in statute. Just a moment, we'll address the amendment regarding the Wyoming Territorial Prison and some other amendments. But basically, Senate File 12 includes lands in Fremont, Park, Natrona, Platte, Hot Springs, Crook, Carbon, Albany, Sheridan, Sublette, Uinta, Converse, Johnson, Sweetwater, Laramie, Fremont, and Lincoln counties. Saving the best for last there. With specific changes noted for Hot Springs Park on page 6, South Pass City on page 9, Kurt Gowdy on page 9, Sinks Canyon on page 10, Fort Steele on page 10, Bear River on page 12, and the Territorial Prison on page 13. But in summary, let me note that Senate File 12 is important because, first, existing statutes that designate and describe state recreation areas are incomplete and outdated. Second, many state recreation areas are not specifically declared, designated, or described in statute, and as a result, some areas are left in question. This creates a problem when it comes to law enforcement authority and construction of any facilities. Third, the bill will provide a consistent method for designation of all state recreation areas that will include meets and bounds and legal descriptions. Fourth, by removing the existing boundaries from statute and maintaining those boundaries through the Administrative Procedures Act, we'll have a more efficient process. Fifth and finally, maybe best of all, there's no significant fiscal or personal impact, and we're advised by staff we're going to save some money here. Now back for a complete, comprehensive review of the amendments to Senate File 12, I yield the floor to the committee chair from Sheridan.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment.
Senator Burns.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, what the Standing Committee amendment is, when the committee was reviewing this, we came in and you'll see that the most frequent change is the deletion of the term of the word state-owned, and this may actually even reflect a little bit on the previous bill we were discussing. Many of the state recreation sites and the state parks that we have in the state are not owned by the state. A good example is Kurt Gowdy. Kurt Gowdy is owned by the city of Cheyenne. The land is, and it's leased to the state to be a state park. Many of the other state parks, many of the reservoir sites, the state does not own that land. It's owned by the federal government, and the state leases that from. So we remove the term state-owned lands throughout the bill. The other changes in spelling you see, that was actually a function of the spell check on the part of the LSO attorneys. Computer, which she did not pick up. It's Edna's State Park, not Edna State Park. Seminole, not Seminole. Kearney is spelled differently. On line 43, page 1, line 43, that's just grammar. When you go to page 2, line 33, we remove I believe we're dealing with South Pass City. It has never been called Old South Pass City, so we just remove that. When you get to page 3 of the amendment, we're talking about the new language there. That refers to the territorial park, and that was requested by the member of the TRD, word park removed and changed to a historic site, which better matches what the use of the property is now. And the concern was, when tourists see the word park, they expect to find facilities, camping, and so forth for them there, when in fact the Territorial Prison is an historic site. And then there's conforming language at the bottom of the amendment. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would take any questions on the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 12, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 12. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, just out of curiosity, on page 15, there's a whole list of repealed items. What do they do?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the vast majority of those were legal descriptions that we are removing out of statute so that they will be in rules. That's the problem with the – that's why this bill was brought, was to bring consistency throughout. So the legal descriptions themselves are in rules at the State Parks Office, and most of what's being repealed were in the cases of some – recreation areas, there was a legal description. In some, there weren't, and in many cases, that legal description was not correct or up to date.
Further discussion? Further. You ready for the question?
Question.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 12, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 12 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Jennings.
To the floor.
Most certainly.
Mr. Chairman, we have already received an answer back from the Parks Department on the question on the previous bill about the state land and the hospital, and we'll have a map that we'll send around tomorrow. That was not that land that we're talking about for the Bear Creek Park was not part of the original land grant for, the, as my colleague described it, the insane asylum. It was a piece of property that was acquired later by the Charities Board, and so that's the piece of property we're dealing with. And I'd like to thank the department for listening to the debate and showing up so quick with the answer. But there will be a map circulated tomorrow to show everybody that.
Thank you, Senator Jennings. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 14, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Circuit Court Hearings of Municipal Violations by Juveniles. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Session, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation for Senate File 14. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll explain the bill. It's a relatively short bill, as I explained it to you folks on introduction. Last year, in our efforts with regards to juvenile justice, we developed what was called a single point of entry, and that single point of entry is a methodology allowed locally for the determination of where a juvenile should be adjudicated, whether it be municipal court, circuit court, a juvenile court. Some sort of methodology needs to be in place so that we keep track of the juveniles, so that you don't run into the situation where you have multiple offenses, let's say in municipal court, and then you have another offense in circuit court, and we don't know about them. And this is a child or a juvenile that probably needs some intervention of some sort. And we've left it to the local jurisdictions how to handle their single point of entry. In Laramie County, for instance, with our district attorney, they have a committee that meets on all of these juveniles and decides which court they may go in. But with regard to Natrona County, Natrona County's desire is to run their juvenile cases through the circuit court. And And in order to do that, they needed some statutory authority. They have developed, at least at this point in time, understanding or agreements amongst the municipalities and the circuit court with regard to handling those juvenile cases in circuit court. And, of course, that's their methodology for handling that, and it's justifiable for how they do things in Natrona County. They have more resources available or diversion programs or whatever it might be through their circuit court vis-a-vis, say, Cheyenne, which has a very active municipal court, or Evanston that has a very active municipal court with juvenile projects. So what this bill does, it is permissive. And the salient language is in paragraph B on page 2. In accordance with 14.6203F, the district attorney, who we charge basically, and district attorney is generic, it includes the county attorneys if there is no district attorney. There's two district attorneys in the state of Wyoming. That's in Natrona County and in Laramie County. May prosecute these cases in circuit court. You'll note, though, that up in paragraph A of that statute, there needs to be agreements approved by the Supreme Court. And with regards to the fines, if there is fines and so forth, as I explained to you the other day, those fines will still continue to go into the municipality's general fund as they are. So this is a permissive bill to allow adjudication of juveniles through the circuit court. Whether or not a locale will opt to do this or not is probably unknown. I suspect that this may be more inclined for an active circuit court that is really involved as they are in Natrona County. I would stand for any questions. But this, as I said, is a Joint Judiciary Committee bill and provides some flexibility for how we deal with single point of entry.
Discussion on the bill. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 14, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 14 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 16. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number
16. Turn it on.
Senate File Number 16, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Property Tax Review of Assessment. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable vote on Senate File 16, Property Tax Review of Assessment. Mr. Chairman, this bill is the result of the task force from Senate File 144 of the 2009 session. What it does, it goes into the review procedures for property tax assessment and makes it a little more transparent. And I'll walk through the bill. Starting on page 1, if a person wants to particularly contest his property tax on his personal property, he is entitled to review the statements of consideration for those properties of like use in geographic area that were available to the county assessor when they determined the value. The statements of consideration are what is the value of that residential property that the assessor used to determine the value of the person who wishes to protest their property tax to see whether it was done accurately or not. What this does, if the person chooses to go to the the county commission sitting as the county board of equalization, they will have the information that the county assessor used to determine the value of their house. And we'll get into some timelines. But over on the top of page 3, we talk about the geographic area. This is the area that the potential protestant, he can look at what's out there in that area for comparable values here within the county. Going on down, and this is on page 3, starting on line 12. The person wishing to review an assessment of his property shall contact the county assessor not later than 30 days after the date of the assessment schedule. This is tied to the deletion on line 17. Anymore, county assessors don't use a postmark. They get a bulk rate. It saves each of our counties money. They do it that way, but this makes a uniform day when we start counting the 30 days. The person has that 30-day span in there to make known that he wishes to see the information in the statement of consideration. It goes in on page 4. Sales information from other relevant sales. He's got to get that information no later than 15 days prior to the scheduled County Board of Equalization hearing. Mr. Chairman, what this does is provides our citizens with the opportunity to at least be able to look at how the assessor determined value. They can decide if they want to appeal it to their local county board of equalization. Puts everybody kind of on an even footing on this deal. This bill and the following bill are the results of that study. It is supported by the County Assessors Association. They want this kind of transparency. I believe it strengthens the ability of a citizen to take care of his personal property and the taxes thereon. I'd be delighted to answer any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Sessions.
Having received a couple of communications from realtors, they are telling me, and I don't know because I haven't been in on the discussions, they're telling me that they're very divided about this bill and that further consideration of it needs to be. But in looking at it, I think one of the accusations that I received was that the value of a property should not be based totally on the sale of another property, that condition and all those other things come in. But in looking at the law, what's in statutes before, I do believe that's covered in the statute, that when you do an appeal, it says disclose information sufficient to permit all of that. And this is my question. When you ask for an appeal of your property, do you get all of those other things? And now we're just giving them ability to look at the assessed valuation of the adjoining properties. That's the question I have.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I were in direct answer to the good senator from Cheyenne, my recollection of the testimony, we did have the realtors come and their representation of their association testify, and Senate File 16, they were unabashedly in favor of it. They had some reservations and had division on Senate File 17, but not on 16. Also, going back on the specific question, what this bill does on page 3 is anybody who wants to contest their taxes has that 30-day notice period that they can come in. Without this bill, the assessors have been unable to share with them the statements of consideration or anywhere else because those statements of consideration are held confidential. So what this allows are two things. One, it allows those statements of consideration to be shared that the assessor may have used in valuing house. And they do take into consideration condition, location, improvements, fixtures. I mean, it comes down to how many bathroom fixtures you have in the house they take into consideration, as well as those other factors. So in this one, it allows that, but it also now allows an expansion of that not only can you see the ones the assessor used, which you can now, it allows you to see the ones the assessor didn't use. And so that it creates that transparency in how your taxes are assessed so that you can see other houses or other statements of consideration that reflect values of sales of like property that were not used, and then the assessor and they can have the discussion about why those were not used in determining the value. And then the third thing it does is it allows you to look for similar properties of like, I think the language is the of like use and geographic area. It defines on the top of page 3 geographic area to be anywhere in the county. So you can't just go wholesale and look at any house. But if you, within the 30 days, if you're challenging your tax assessment, you want to look and see what other like properties are. You have the right to see those statements of consideration for like properties. But again, in order to do any of this, you have to file within, you have to be protesting your taxes and file that concern or that objection to your within the 30-day time period you have to file your taxes. So it's not an open window, an open invitation for anybody to just go snoop around and see what houses are selling for in your community.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the concept of this bill. The question I'd have, though, is that before we had confidentiality with any private business transaction, and now we don't, I'm wondering if there's any protection in here to say to after you get your taxes and you make a determination and you've got all the information you need to protest it and find out, are you barred from using that information and disclosing that? Is there any is there any protection at all left in those private transactions?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and we'll deal more directly with this issue in the next bill, but understand when the county assessor releases this information to an individual citizen, for all practical purposes, it is in the public arena. It's his information. He can take it to the hearing. He can talk about it. I guess to answer my colleague's question, it's out there for the public. The next bill will specify that more closely, but any time that you give a property owner this kind of information, it is, there are no restrictions. They can take it to the Board of Equalization hearing. That's what it's for. But it's also their information then. So for all practical purposes, it's in the public arena.
Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, just to try to understand the appeal process, because normally if you get your tax assessment and you don't like what's done there, you appeal it to the local county board of equalization, which is normally the county commissioners. This is the process we're doing here. If the local board of equalization agrees with how the property is assessed, this procedure I see on this page then kicks in, and you have 30 days to do this. Your other option being at this point, if you don't like still what's going on, you take it to the state board of equalization. Am I correct on this? So we're dealing with the local county board of equalization after somebody doesn't like how their property is assessed and they want to appeal it. Correct?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, my colleague from Park County is probably as close as he ever came to being almost right. What this does, this is the appeal process. This is where you initiate the appeal process. The first, if you say, I'm going to appeal my property taxes, they valued my house too high or too low or whatever, that's where this kicks in. You have a specific time frame. You have to contact the county assessor 30 days after the date of the assessment schedule. That's the window I have. I got that 30 days. I got to go tell my assessor, I need this information, whatever it was that you used to place a value on my home. That's before you go to the County Board of Equalization. If you go on over to the next page, they'll talk about that the county assessor has to provide those relevant statements of consideration, which is the valuation, no later than 15 days prior to the scheduled County Board of Equalization. In other words, that is, you appeal within the 30, you say, give me the information. You've got 30 days to do that. At least 15 days prior to when your county commission meets, sitting as the Board of County Equalization, they have to provide you with that information. So at least you walk in the door and you go ahead with your appeal. When you go in front of your County Board of Equalization, you've had 2 weeks to study this information. That's really what this bill does. The next bill does a little bit different, and it's a companion to this, but that's what it is. It's at the, it starts at the county level. In terms of, if you don't agree with your county Board of Equalization, you have the right to appeal it to the State Board of Equalization. And you'll take the same information, which you already got, and you can go appeal it at the state level, yes. That's the next step in this process. Does that make it a little clear?
Senator Coe.
I'm almost right here, Mr. Chairman, but probably not quite. The existing old language here says the county assessor shall notify any person whose property assessment has been increased by the County Board of Equalization of the increase. That means somebody has already gone in front of the local County Board of Equalization and doesn't agree with their taxes. Am I correct in this?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the answer is that your when you get your notice of assessment from the assessor, it'll have this current year's, and I think it also shows the last year's, so that you have the, from there, you should be able to determine whether it's increased or not increased. And I suppose you could contest even a decrease in front of the Board of County Commissioners, although I think that would probably be unlikely. But this is the ability to make that record at the county level. It's intended to make that at the county level. Well, if you don't make your record and provide your evidence at the county level, at that point, you cannot add evidence to the record on appeal. You have whatever evidence you're going to produce as to value and assessment has to be done at that county level. There's no new evidence that's going to be considered on the appeal.
Senator Cooper.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since you had two ex-county commissioners in here, you might as well have three. So here we go. I can see where the confusion comes in here a little bit on page 3, as the good senator from Park County was talking about, on lines 10, 11, and 12, where it says the county assessor shall notify any person whose property assessment has been increased. That makes sense. But then it says by the County Board of Equalization.
Please speak into your microphone.
Okay, excuse me. but then it says, I'll do that over again. It says the county assessor shall notify, this is line 10, 11, and 12 on page 3. The county assessor shall notify any person whose property assessment has been increased by the county. Now, if you stopped it there, that's fine. But then it goes on to say the Board of Equalization of the increase. The Board of Equalization doesn't notify people of the increase. And so this is kind of interesting. Now, this looks like this is current law. Am I right? Or is this current law?
Senator Schiffer.
It is current law. And if you'll look on your, theoretically, if you look on your assessment schedule for your residence, it says somewhere on there what your taxes were the year before and then what they are for the year that you're in. We changed that statute a number of years ago. It was to inform the public. That's still true. And in fact, if you get right down to it, I think you'll find somewhere in the statute that the assessor actually sets the values on behalf of the County Board of Equalization. That's why the language, the old language, is in there. And it's been there for many years, but we did change that on your current assessment, say you're in 2009. It's got to tell you what it was in 2008. And that's been there. I can remember being confused by that bill, but we passed it a number of years ago. That's still in effect. An assessor is supposed to tell you what the change was from year to year. But this bill goes more if you decide to appeal your assessment. It means the county assessor has to show you how he or she came to the value that they came to. Hence, that's what your assessment is.
Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask some of our distinguished attorneys whether or not this bill creates a conflict between the right to know and then the right to privacy of those who sold their property and sits in the county assessor's office.
Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this bill, the next one especially, is very definitely a conflict. There isn't any doubt about that, and I'm not an attorney, and I don't, but it very definitely is a decision between a right to privacy and a right to be able to protest your taxes when you go before the Board of Equalization. There's no doubt about that. And so what you have to do is weigh whether it is more important to the people of the state of Wyoming who are having their taxes set by assessors on a basis of, we can go into the CAMA system, we can go into everything, but it is, a lot of it is subjective. Now, some of them will tell you, no, it isn't, it's precise. It is not precise. It is very subjective by county assessors in most instances. So you have to decide, I guess, whether or not you think it is more important to have absolute privacy on all of this information so that you, when you go to protest your taxes or get your notice, have virtually no knowledge of anything that's going on the way your taxes were assessed. And the committee came down on the side of, if the state's going to tax you and you're going to have it, you have a right as a citizen to know how that is being calculated. But there's no doubt that it's a conflict, as many of our laws are, between the right of privacy and the right of, number one, you as a taxpayer to know how you're being assessed, and perhaps even the general public to know what they're going to be assessed at some future date. So, yes, it is. It's very definitely the two are in conflict. Not as much in this bill as the next one, perhaps, but it is there.
Further discussion? Thank you. Okay. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 16, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 16 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. Senator Escobel, you are fast.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have some of the answers for some of the questions that were asked on Senate File 20, and I've got a definitive answer in regard to as to whether brand inspectors or a doctor of the day would be included as emergency responders. And according to the staff, the answer is unclear. part of the reason for this, Mr. Chairman, is that it refers to emergency response vehicle. And in applying the law, the court may look to the definition to determine who might be included within the meaning of emergency responder, which would likely not include someone like a brand inspector or the doctor of the day. So likely, probably not. in regard to as to whether texting on the open range would be a violation of this bill. Technically, according to staff, it would be. However, there's some other statutes that would also be in violation of the law in the open range: careless driving, reckless driving, DUI, posting. So if the body or an individual senator would like, we could make the language a little bit more clear by adding language such as in motion of a public street or a public highway or something like that. But there's other statutes that are similar to the texting statute, so thought the body might be interested. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry for the interruption.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. As a point of order, I think when you have information on a bill that's been previously presented, previously discussed, that that should come in second reading. So as a matter of record, that then becomes, that information becomes in second reading along with that bill. So I would encourage us then, if you have additional information that relates to a first reading bill, bring that on second reading in the context of that second reading debate. I know you're all waiting for another motion. We're going to do one more bill. Thank you.
The reading clerk will please read Senate File 17.
Senate File 17, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. Statement of Consideration. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larsons, Perkins, and Schiffer.
Jennings.
No, Senators Case and Martin. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 17, Statement of Consideration. Mr. Chairman, this is the companion bill to the bill we just looked at. Again, it's a product of Senate File 154, and our good colleague from Lincoln County who served on that task force. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it makes for residential property the Statement of Consideration becomes a public document. It's on page 1, line 12. It takes the statement out of the protected information, and that puts it into the public domain. The reason for this, and the reason it's a companion to the other bill, again, it goes to the ability of a property owner to be able to adequately defend his protest if he believes the county assessor made an error when they calculated his property taxes. What this allows a property owner to do is look at all of the property in the county and say, what property did the assessors exclude from consideration? What did that assessor say? That property is not similar to mine, therefore I'm not going to use it. Because believe it or not, it's quite possible, it could be possible, that a county assessor would cherry pick the comparables to make sure that the property fitted what the assessment needed. And this gives the appellant the ability to go in, look at all property, and bring that information to the County Board of Equalization. I don't have any evidence at all that cherry-picking is done. I don't know. But it's possible. This gives, if you want to protest your taxes, you can look and say, what property did that assessor exclude that is exactly like mine? Same square footage, same construction, same age, same condition of deterioration, and all those kind of things. That's what this bill does. It is a choice. It's a policy decision. Anytime, it seems to me, anytime you're basing an individual's property taxes on information they should have access to how those taxes were determined. I think that's a right that we all should have. If you want to base it on market price, and that's the fundamental, what we do is statement of consideration says, this is what the market will bear. That's why many of us have seen our property taxes go up. Some go up a lot because residential property values went up based on sales. It seems to me that we as citizens have the right to know what's out there. What are the figures the assessor really used, or what are the ones the assessor chose, and it is a choice. I want to see what they compared to or what they didn't compare to. And it seems to me that's one of our fundamental rights. We pay our taxes, but we should know how they're determined. And this is the bill that empowers you to go in and say, what was the market really like? And that's what this does. In order to do that, you have to make those statements of consideration a public document, and you can go in and see how those values were determined. Again, I agree with my colleague from Teton County. This is a policy choice. It has to do with the fundamental right of us as property owners to be able to see how our taxes are actually determined. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, it's sort of a balancing act. We talked about that before. But the previous bill gives the person that's filing an appeal the ability to get the data that they need to conduct their appeal. And it is absolutely true that property owners have been up against it when they go in to try to appeal their assessment. But I think the first bill, the one we just did, really does that. You know, it defines the market area. It lets them see the properties that were used and the ones that weren't. Yes, it's still within that appeal period. What this bill does is take every piece of property and open it up as a public record. It could be printed in the newspaper at what the sales price was. Those statements of consideration could be, they'd probably be available on the web. Everybody could see what everybody did. Now, I don't know. It's how you feel about it. I'm not always the smartest businessman in the world, and I will admit I have. There are probably some amounts I paid for property where I probably look pretty stupid when it all hangs out, and I'm not sure I want to throw that out in front of you. But there's some one or two times I've been smart, but only one or two. Mr. President or Mr. Chairman, I voted no against this bill. I mean, you can just go so far. Why do we need to do this? It's so they can do the appeal, because people have a right to appeal it. This takes it further. And I would argue that this goes beyond that and just throws it open to everyone. And I don't know. There's just some things I guess shouldn't be public.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've got some of the same I guess heartburn on this as the good senator from Fremont County. But I do want to have that openness as far as the ability of a taxpayer to know why their taxes are what they are. And I'm wondering if we could look at it from the standpoint on page 2, line 8, at the end of a public record may be disclosed, and say something like, for the purposes of appealing taxes, assessments in an executive hearing of appeal, something language like that, so you know as a taxpayer how your taxes were derived, what properties were used to derive those, what properties were used not to derive them, but it's information that you use basically in a closed appeal process, and you can't publish them in a newspaper. So I'm thinking that there's some way that you can split the baby on this and actually end up with twins.
My heartburn. Senator Schiffer.
Oh, heartburn.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer those concerns in order. In terms of the statements by my colleague from Fremont County, not exactly. And Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'm going to refer back to Senate File 16. All Senate File 16 does, and I'm quoting, and this is old language. This is already in statute. And I'm on page 2, lines 8. Provide the person or his agent papers of all information, including statements of consideration, the assessor relied upon in determining the property value. That means the assessor only releases to you the property that they say they relied on. The bill that we're considering right now says you get to look because assessors may or may not release the statement of consideration on comparable property. And you'll never know it. If that assessor chooses not to use it, for example, and I'll use Johnson County as an example, say there were 10 sales of houses, and then the assessor comes to my house and says, all right, here's the value on my home, and here's 5 sales that are comparable to my home. It might be that the other 5 sales were in fact comparable sales. The age, the square footage, the condition, all that stuff they use. But they might have been, different, higher, or lower. And the assessor can say, nope, I'm not going to show John those. And the assessor doesn't have to. What Senate File 17 says is I have the right to go in and look at those statements of consideration and say, even though the assessor didn't use that, that property is comparable to mine. And that's the fairness footing. That's what makes it fair. I can question whether the assessor did a good and accurate and equitable job assessing my property. I do not have to rely on just the information the assessor decides to give me and says that's what I use to determine your value. If you really want an open process and want taxpayers to know how did you reach your value and was it fair and was it justified, you have to give them access so they can look and see what sales are throughout their county. And that's what 17 does. I readily admit it is a trade-off, but you're basing public policy, and most especially tax policy, on documents that right now you have no access to. You have no access to that. Senate File 17 gives you the power of information, and that is a tremendous power, and we should cherish it. I understand the right of privacy, but I also understand if I'm going to be taxed, I want to know how bad I'm getting hurt, and I want to know how I got there. And that's what 17 does.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being the old guy in here, I'm going to go back and give you a little bit of history of how we got here. Our Constitution says that there shall be assessed on a value, quote, as determined by the legislature. But that was taken to court, and the court ruled, no, it isn't going to be determined by the legislature. It's going to be determined on the basis and assessed on the basis of comparable sales. And that's what we've used, and that's what the assessors had to use for a long time, ever since that particular court case. And so the legislature's had no power to do that. I've tried bills for now 16 years to get that part of the thing changed. We're not there. They must use comparable sales. They have the right to determine the neighborhoods. They have a camera system that they put stuff into, and it spits stuff out. But and the bottom line is, assessing is still a very subjective, I don't know what to say, trade, art. It isn't a science. And I'm not even going to say they're cherry-picking. I'm going to say that they can make mistakes. That's what the appeal process is about. They can use neighborhoods that they may think are right. You as a taxpayer do not think are right. But without that statement of consideration, you don't know. You don't know what the other neighborhoods are. You don't know what you may have been able to use to do a comparable. And remember, we have to do comparable sales now, because that's what the court told us, not as determined by the legislature. And so that's where we are. Without that, and let me remind everybody that this is residential property only. Doesn't apply to other things, because there are other methods of assessment. Agriculture is not assessed on fair market value. Businesses can be assessed on income. There's other things. This is residential only. So, yeah, once again, it is a trade-off. It's whether or not you think it is in your interest as a citizen and taxpayer in the state of Wyoming to keep that sale of property, if you sell it, absolutely confidential, or if you think it's a better right of a taxpayer of the state of Wyoming to have the full knowledge to go in and dispute your taxes if you think that it isn't being accurately assessed. So it's a policy question. There ain't any doubt about that. That's how we got where we were. That's how we are now. And though I may not like it, as you indicated, excuse me, the senator from Cheyenne, let me address one of the statements that were brought up on realtors. I bet I got more emails than anyone in here from realtors, and that's probably because we have more realtors than any place in the world. But the emails I got, I found them interesting, because half were for it, half were against it, and the other half, I get stuff in the middle that says, make up your own mind, which was supposed to be, they were supposed to make up their mind and email me. I got many of them that said, Dear Senator Larson, and never said another thing. So the email network was working good, but those who did respond were basically 50-50. And the realtors told us that the intensity of this is way, way down from a lot of other issues that they've had before, and that their responses were pretty well split down the middle. And so it's a value judgment to you. If you believe that your confidentiality is more important than having the right to get to go in and really appeal your taxes, then you probably should vote no. I happen to believe that the right to know what you're being assessed takes a little priority over what when you may have an occasional sale of a real estate piece of property. So you make up your mind, but that's the issues.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to bring a different light to this, and I have great respect for what the great senator from Teton County said. There's a saying up in Park County that we ought to pass a law that makes it illegal for realtors to outnumber people. But anyway, I want to bring one other perspective to this debate. And I also heard from realtors, and it was 50-50. But I didn't hear a lot from people that weren't realtors. And I can tell you over the last 4 or 5 years, the number one issue that's been going around up in Park County, and I know other counties in the state, is the increase in property taxes. Sometimes 200, 220% in 1 year. There was an outcry. Why is the state, and you know, they look at us, Why is the state raising our taxes? Well, we aren't really, when you got a $1 billion surplus. What's going on out there? This vehicle provides the real people out there an opportunity and a mechanism to really know what's going on. This bill is very, very important. It's not just important to realtors. Honestly, I really don't care what realtors think about it. I care about what the people out there care about. And there's great concern out there still about the increase in property taxes. For 4 years in a row, 4 or 5 years, there was an outcry in the state. You got to do something about property taxes. This bill, I think, is the vehicle. Open that door to start to do something about it and put it on the table so it's transparent.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd kind of like to know what information is going to be released. I used to own some property about 100 miles south of here, and when we sold that property, it was published in the newspaper. And we continued to take a subscription to that newspaper until I saw that property sell about 2 or 3 more times at about double of what we got for it, and then we canceled the subscription because I didn't want to know anymore. But it was terrible. But all they published was the address and the amount. So it wouldn't be like the senator from Lander saying that somebody could go in there and see whether he had a good deal or a bad deal. It had the address and the amount, or the town and the amount. So if I really wanted to know if the senator from Lander had a good deal or a bad deal, then I'd have to do a lot of more research to come back around and go to the county clerk or whoever has that information and find out who owned that parcel to determine whether that person made a good deal or a bad deal. So my question is in this data that's going to be released, is it just going to be the address and the city and the amount, or is it going to be the senator from Lander got a whole bunch of money for that parcel he didn't pay any money for?
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, two areas that I'll make comments on. When the statement of considerations was put into the Wyoming law, I was in the House Revenue Committee, and we had just the same length of discussion at the time. As I recall, the general public that was aware of it, and they was probably much more aware of it because we were doing a complete new system after the courts had found that our current property tax was unequal and unconstitutional. And at that time, by far, the private individual did not want their property value released to the public. What their thoughts is now, I have no way of knowing. What my understanding of how the protest now works and where the disagreement comes in, that if you protest your property tax, the county assessor have to show you the property value that he or she used in determining your property. But you have no idea of knowing whether it's next door, whether it's several blocks away, or just where. So, I am now becoming confused because the bill we just passed said that, as I interpret it, if you protest your property with this law that we just passed in committee of the whole, it says that the property owner or his agent may get the value of any property within that county. So that way, that individual can know the whole value of every property in the county. To me, that is sufficient. But if we go with this current bill, that means everybody in the world, whatever you consider the world, but everybody can go in and check your value of your property, whether you want it or not. And I think that's the determination we have to make, is whether everybody, I think with Senate File 16, the person that is protesting that property will have the right with his agent to go in and look at everybody's property in the county. I have no problem with that. But I do have a concern personally, and I think a lot of individuals will, when we open it up just so we can go check on how much your property, how much your house is valued at. And I could be mistaken, but I think I'm pretty correct on this.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, again, you're not opening up or what this doesn't do. Let's make sure we're clear on what this does and what it doesn't do. It doesn't open up the assessor's valuation of your property, everyone. We're talking about statements of consideration. The statements of consideration and what is required in a statement of consideration is set forth in Wyoming Statute 34-1-142A, which says, when a deed or contract or other document transferring legal or equitable title to real property is presented to a county clerk for recording, the instrument shall be accompanied by a statement, and this is the statement we're talking about, the statement of consideration, a statement under oath by the grantee, which is the person who's filing the deed, or his agent, disclosing the name of the grantor. So this is the information that's on the statement of consideration. Who sold the property? Who bought the property? The date of the transfer? The date of the sale? A legal description of the property transferred with the actual full amount paid or to be paid for the property? The terms of the sale, which is generally, it's a form, so it's an abbreviated form. So it's going to be whether it was a cash or whether it was mortgage or contract for deed, something like that. And the value of any non-real property, so if there's personal property that was associated with that, the value of that property. Those are the items that are listed on the statement of consideration, and those only those statements. So it's only, the only thing that's out there is when you have sold the house. If you don't sell property, there's no statement of consideration. It's only when you sell or when you transfer property required to do a statement of consideration. Now, we also do statements of consideration when you transfer property in a without value. For example, in estate planning, you may transfer property to a trust, and a lot of times that has to be accompanied by a statement of consideration. It has who it went from, who it went to, but the value of the transfer is it's exempt. So there's no value associated with the statement of consideration in that regard because it's an exempt transfer. So, again, we're talking about sales or transfers. If there's no sale, there's no property. It's only for sales. And obviously, I think that there may be some time limit in, as far as relevance, but this does throw it all the way open. The other bill, you had to, the prerequisite you would be having to file within 30 days, you've got to file this notice of appeal when you get your assessment. This is saying that if you don't, this is for anybody else who doesn't file in that 30 days, if you're interested in getting ready to know about your next assessment or getting ready to go on, you can get a head start on it. And quite frankly, you can be nosy if you really want to know what people paid for other residential property in some transaction down the street. Sure, a nosy person's going to be able to get that statement of consideration. But that's what this bill does and what it doesn't do. It's only referring to these statements of consideration and no other valuation items.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last question. How far back, as I understand this bill, when we initiated the description of a statement of consideration, and we can go back to the county courthouse, clear back to that time, be it 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and now that becomes public information. Is that correct?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer these questions in order. In terms of the question posed by the President of the Senate, the previous bill we looked at, the only thing the assessor releases under that bill are the statements of consideration, and the wording is at issue. That means the ones that the assessor used determining the value of the person that's protesting their taxes. Let me give an example. A member of the legislature appealed his taxes. Jumped through the hoops. County assessor provided him with five statements of consideration. He went ahead with his appeal to the County Board of Appeal. When the member of the legislature got in there, county assessor showed up with 188 values. That's what can happen. What we're saying in the bill in front of us is that legislator or any other person that wants to find out how their taxes were reached has the right to look at all 188. No surprises when you go in. And that gentleman was surprised, I assure you. Walked in there fat, dumb, and happy and thought he had the facts, and he didn't. So do not misunderstand. 16 provides what the county assessor used on the property at issue that they released to you. The bill we are on right now says if you choose to protest your taxes, you can go look at all of consideration, say these are the ones that are comparable to my dwelling. In terms of the timeline, I'll have to find that out. I don't know how long they keep them, but understand, it's market-driven. In other words, markets change. I think what they do is they keep, my understanding is, they keep statements of consideration, but they know they see trends in the market, and they use that as perspective. But I'll try and find out more and give my colleague from Fremont County a more definitive answer. But I think assessors track the trends in their quote tax neighborhood is how they do that.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I think there might actually be an error in this bill because there is language in this bill that's not underlined, that's not in the statute, in the titles I have. Okay? So that's something we can check out. I don't know if it's true or not, but the language on lines 11, 12, and 13, and the very last word on lines 10, on page 2, the words that say, starting on the end of line 10, and including statements of consideration for properties of like use and geographic area, which were available to the assessor and are requested by the person or his agent. Now, I argue, Mr. Chairman, that that gives any property within the geographic area, and I'm sorry, I am referring to Senate File 16, and I apologize. But it's relevant to this bill, and I apologize.
And we got to discuss that. But we are actually on Senate File 17. This is a committee member that read the bill up there, and if we miss something, we'll go back and look at 17, but the debate and the subject on the floor is Senate File 16. 17. This is 16. I'll get together with my colleague from Fremont County. We'll look at the language, and if we have to bring an amendment or something to take care of that, that issue is a separate issue than the vote up or down on Senate File 17.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I appreciate all the debate, and these are certainly critical bills. But if we continue, out of respect for staff, I'm going to have to take a few minutes break. And so let's try to conclude the debate if we can.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I stand corrected on the point of order. I would like to make the point that the two bills are intrinsically related, and the need for one depends on how you interpret the other, and we have till tomorrow to sort that out. And my good chairman is appropriate to point it out, and I will do my best to clear it up.
Senator Dockstader.
Just quickly, since 2003, we have failed to pass any property tax relief legislation. This is the entire binder of all the pieces of legislation that have failed up to 2008. They failed last year, and so our next best opportunity comes in Senate File 17 to provide information when we can't provide tax relief. Thank you.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very, very briefly, I would just like, as you're balancing privacy versus the ability to protest your taxes, remember, There is no statement of consideration unless you make a sale. If you sell your home, and it is limited to the residential property, if you sell your home, that statement of consideration is out there. The citizens of Wyoming and you pay your taxes every single year. Every single year. And how often do you sell your home, or does a citizen of Wyoming sell their home that would make that statement of consideration available to other people? So that's the issue, and that's what you need within your hearts to decide.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 17 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Yours.
Oh, you want to turn yours now?
Okay. Do I have a script or do I remember? Oh, it's over there. I already wrote it down. I think I might remember, but. Reading clerk, we read the Committee as a Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 4, do pass. Senate File 5, do pass amended. Senate File 6, do pass. Senate File 20, do pass. Senate File 40, do pass. Senate File 3, do pass amended. Senate File 10, do pass amended. Senate File 11, do pass. Senate File 12, do pass amended. Senate File 14 do pass, Senate File 16 do pass, and Senate File 17 do pass. Senator Johnson, Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. President, I move approval of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. No reports, and okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Announcements, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, at our morning meeting, decided to continue discussion of Senate File 48, licensure of midwives, 40 minutes after the afternoon adjournment. That would now run us to nearly 6 o'clock and run the meeting unreasonably late. So we have decided that we aren't going to continue the discussion today. We're going to go to 7 a.m. on Friday on that bill. And for committee members and their preparation, the other bills on Friday will be ones with appropriations in them that are going to stay in them, and we'll see if we can take any others up. But we will not meet further today. It will be 7 a.m. Friday morning.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resource. We'll meet tomorrow night upon adjournment, and we'll take up Senate File 36, Gillette-Madison Water Project, Senate File 37, Alma's Water Bill Construction, Senate File 63, Irrigation District Assessments.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet in upon adjournment on Friday in room S13. To consider Senate File 7, Rangeland Health Assessments, Senate File 13, Economic Analysis, Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement, and Senate File 42, School Finance, Student Enrichment Instruction, and we'll look at the appropriations on those, Mr. President.
Senator Weinblatterin.
Mr. President,
Senator, Committee Number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet in 10 minutes in room S13 to take up a small bill, Senate File 35, tolling authority for I-80.
Senator Largeson. Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Friday, 15 minutes after the noon adjournment, to take up Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, Senate File 66, Industrial Siting Amendments, and Senate File 52, Reduced Cigarette Ignition Propensity.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S-19 to consider one bill, Senate File 18. We'll probably be working tomorrow and maybe one or two more days on that bill. That's a limited liability company bill. And, Mr. Chair, that the electronic version of our statutes don't have that language that I mentioned earlier on Senate File 16, and I'm sorry, but it is in our hard copy statutes.
Senator Schiffer.
And Mr. Chairman, it just confirms my opinion of those machines. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, your Revenue Committee Number 3 will meet tomorrow Thursday, 30 minutes after noon recess up in the scenic corner of the Capitol to take up Senate File 47, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting, Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing, and Senate File 58, Eminent Domain Limitations.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senate is adjourned.